This conference will now be recorded.
I'm going to call the September 1st, 2020 meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we'll begin as always with the flag salute. Councilmember Steckler, would you do the honors?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Naomi, the roll call?
Yes. Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Yeah.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Councilmember Vanel?
Here.
Okay, we'll move now to audience communication. Since we're virtual and not everyone has their screens up, I'm going to try to be fair and call on people as well. Well, I'm getting the stop sign.
Yeah, Brian, your audio is way overmodulated. There's something wrong with it.
I can't hear you either, Brian.
Better now?
Better now.
No. Oh, it must have been. I had a notepad. Okay. I'll start over. We're at the roll call or audience communication portion of the meeting. Since some of you are on phones and some of you are on videos, I'm just going to have to kind of wing this. So either clap hands on the screen or raise your hand or quickly chime in, and I'll try to take everyone in order that I see them.
Sure.
Remember, this is an opportunity to the council, not with the council. So please state your name and address for the record. Once you've done that, you'll have 3 minutes to speak. And Naomi, if I could pose upon you to keep track of the clock as the arbiter of the time.
Absolutely.
So with that, who would like to speak to the council today?
Going twice? No one?
Going once, twice, three times. With that, we will move on in our agenda. There will be another opportunity at the end of the meeting for audience communication. So if you want to wait to the end of the meeting, we'll have another chance.
Mr. Chair, this is Councilmember Todd.
Yes, please.
I would like to, I want to make sure we get something covered tonight while our audience is still with us. So I'd like to move that our agenda be amended to add an additional topic to the first item under new initiative tonight, and that topic would be process and timeline for filling the vacant council seat number 3.
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember Todd, for bringing that to our attention. It was our intent to put that on the agenda. We overlooked it. We were going to discuss it in the city manager's report, but I think it's good that we address it up front. So is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Anyone abstaining? Motion carries. So with that, we'll jump into a brief discussion on the process for filling position number 3, which was vacated last week. This is a term that would run through the end of 2021. Where's Michael? I'm not seeing his. There he is, upper right. Do you want to kick us off?
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw. It's appropriate at this time under Section C to begin the discussion and nominations for election of mayor.
Well, we're talking about the process for filling position 3 on the council. We're not to the vote.
Okay. What we're working to do is advertise for the position following protocol, past protocol that the City of Mill Creek has followed. Announcing the vacancy and inviting applicants. We'd like some feedback from council regarding the amount of time to leave the vacancy and open and advertise for the position. We would then gather all of the applicants for it, bring it to the council's attention, and then we would proceed from that point forward.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Thank you, Mayor.
So regarding this process, I would like to see us not prolong this too much. I would like to advertise it this week and have us conduct some sort of interview process next week. I think our agendas, especially with the budget coming up, are going to be jam-packed with content, and waiting is only going to just kind of it's just going to delay the whole process. So I think the sooner we can do this, and maybe a 1 week advertisement, and let's move on it next week, that would be my hope and my goal here. Thank you.
Councilmember Vigneault.
I would like to see us go ahead and get this advertised, and I also would like to see us move forward quickly. I'm just not sure that a week is quite long enough to make sure that we reach out to everyone and give them an opportunity. So I might recommend a little bit longer of a timeline to before we actually start the interview process.
Michael, have you been able to track down the materials that we had from 2 years ago when we had the appointment that resulted in Stephanie's appointment?
I believe that we've thus far been partially successful. I don't know what the template was for the duration then, but I'm confident that we could have this information published, social media platforms, or the press release out before the end of tomorrow.
Yeah, I'd be Councilmember Todd.
My thought on this was just I wanted to get it kicked off, and I appreciate everybody's anxious to move quickly, as am I. I think it makes a lot of sense. In our past practice, my recollection is we've advertised it for applications to come in over a two-week period and then promptly schedule interviews after that. If we got five people, it's easy. If we get 20 people, it's tough. And so I don't want to rush staff to make sure we laid out a process that if we do get 20 people, we've at least thought about that. So I would love to see it, and I respect Councilmember Cavallari's, let's get it going. I just think by getting applications and processing them by next week, it's gonna be tough for the public and tough for us. So my hope was that we could just really finalize this and get it all fired off by next week. And then that gives us 2 weeks until our next council meeting. And so during that 2 weeks would be when we'd be making sure we had everything slicked up and then plan this for the fourth meeting in September, whatever that is, the 22nd would be the night we would set aside to making the having the interview process.
Yeah, that was kind of my thinking, is that Michael and his staff could bring to us next week proposed schedule and some information on what our schedule was 2 years ago, so we can see how we did it and compare. We do have, if we wanted to, depending on what the agendas are like, we have an extra week in September. There are 5 weeks this month, so we meet on the 1st, 2nd, and 4th, but there's a 3rd and 5th Tuesday in September. And that's something that may, I don't know if we'll end up needing it possibly for a budget session, or we could use it just for conducting interviews, if that fits into the schedule and if everyone's schedules could accommodate that. So I guess if there's no objection, I'd ask Michael and Naomi and Jeff to bring back to us next week a proposed schedule. And if you could include whatever materials we had so we can see what the, I think we had an application form with some information that we requested. And as I recall, the other issue was the interview questions, but that's a little bit down the road. We can probably discuss that at a future meeting before the interviews. Councilmember Steckler or Bond, any thoughts, comments?
I just would like to move as fast as is reasonable. I don't want to go too fast. I like what Stephanie said. We want to make sure we get the word out to anybody that's interested, but I would like to see us move quickly.
I agree with the suggestion. Let's have the materials at next week's meeting all prepared, ready to go for us to review, and then we've got 2 weeks before the September 22nd. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's realistic that we can have this wrapped up by possibly the first meeting in October.
Yeah.
At least that's the goal I'd like us to work towards. Let's see what this calendar looks like when he gets us the materials.
Yeah.
That work? Any other thoughts on that? Okay. Moving on. Next up is the election of the mayor to fill the vacancy created by Pam's resignation last week. Michael, are you kicking this off or am I?
You're muted. Michael, you're muted. You look good, though.
Thank you, sir. The Mayor Pro Tem, I believe you kick it off, and then the floor is turned over to our city clerk to begin to entertain nominations.
Okay, I'm going to read the same process that we used when we went through this in January of, was it this year? I guess it was this year, just 9 months ago. So if anyone, if I have trouble hearing me, just please chime in so I'll make sure to speak up. I'll cover my mic here again on the phone. So under our form of government, the council elects a mayor and mayor pro tem at the first meeting of each numbered year. Even numbered year, the mayor is elected biannually. As you know, on August 24th, 2020, Mayor Pruitt resigned from the city council, leaving a vacancy in the position of mayor. State law directs us to hold an election to fill the position of mayor for the remainder of the term. Pursuant to City Resolution 2011-473, Council adopted a manual of city governance that includes the procedures that we use to conduct the election of a mayor and, if necessary, a mayor pro tem. Our process includes procedures for nominating candidates and procedures for voting. I'll now describe those procedures. The nomination process. Candidates for mayor and, if necessary, mayor pro tem shall be nominated by a member of the council. Nominations require a second to place the nominee in contention for selection. We will first hold the election for mayor, and if necessary, we'll conduct an election for mayor pro tem. If the council is unable to select a mayor or mayor pro tem, as the case may be, after five ballots, or if any ballot containing only two candidates, one of the candidates withdraws his or her name from consideration before the vote on the ballot, nominations shall be reopened. If nominations are reopened, candidates that did not receive at least one vote during any of the preceding ballots must be nominated as set forth above. Nominations shall be reopened after every fifth ballot thereafter as needed. Any nominated candidate may withdraw from the selection process at any time except during an ongoing vote. The voting process. Our procedure for voting at the close of nominations calls for the clerk to place the names of all nominated candidates in random order on a written ballot, designating the ballot as round one, ballot number one, and distributing the ballot to each council member. The procedure also calls for each council member to cast one vote for the candidate of his or her choosing, their right abstain on the ballot. The ballot is then signed by the council member casting the vote. The ballot is collected by the clerk who tabulates the vote, announces the name of each candidate, the number of votes for the candidate, and the council members voting for the candidate. If no candidate obtains at least four votes of the council, the candidate or candidates receiving the lowest numbers of votes shall be removed from the ballot, provided that at least two candidates shall move forward to the next ballot, and the clerk shall prepare the next ballot and shall designate it as round one, ballot number two. Ballot preparation and voting shall continue in that manner for five ballots or until one candidate receives at least four votes of the council, whichever occurs first. No candidate is elected after five ballots. Nomination shall be reopened as previously described, and voting shall continue in the same manner for five ballots or until one candidate receives at least four votes of the council, whichever comes first. Because we are meeting in a virtual format and we are not together, the voting process must be abandoned slightly. What we propose to do, if there's no objection of the council, is to conduct the nomination process as I have described. However, instead of voting by paper ballot, the clerk will prepare a ballot with the name of the nominated candidates, email the ballot to council members. Each council member will then complete the ballot and email it back to the clerk, who will then tabulate the ballots, announce the name of each candidate, number of votes for the candidate, and the council members voting for the candidate. Is there unanimous consent to conduct the elections with this change in the voting procedure to accommodate our virtual meeting tonight?
Yes, there is.
Aye.
Seeing no objection, then we will begin by opening the floor to nominations for mayor. Please raise your hand if you'd like to be called upon to make a nomination. Do we have any nominations? Councilmember Todd.
I would like to nominate Brian Holtzclaw to be mayor.
I second.
Second.
Third, fourth.
I don't know that I want to discuss the topic, but is there any discussion? With that, I guess I will call the vote. And I am going to, just for the record, abstain from voting. So all those in favor of electing myself as mayor for the remainder of 2020 and 2021, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Me abstaining, I guess I am now duly elected as mayor. Thank you. How do we do this? Do we virtually administer?
Yes, we'll administer the oath of office for the mayor. So you'll repeat after me.
Well, I have to stand or can I remain seated? As long as you have, you'll be able to see me.
Right. As long as you have your hand up. Yep. I, Brian Holtzclaw.
I, Brian Holtzclaw.
Having been duly elected.
Having been duly elected.
To the office of mayor.
The office of mayor.
Of the city of Mill Creek, Washington.
The city of Mill Creek, Washington.
Do I solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully.
That I will faithfully.
Impartially.
Impartially.
And to the best of my ability.
And to the best of my ability.
Perform the duties of my office.
Perform the duties of my office.
As prescribed by law.
As prescribed by law.
And I will support.
And I will support.
And maintain the laws and ordinances.
And maintain the laws and ordinances.
Of the city of Mill Creek.
Of the city of Mill Creek.
And the laws and constitution of the state of Washington.
The laws and constitution of the state of Washington.
And the United States of America.
And the United States of America.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. If I can indulge you just for a minute.
I say we spend $15 on a new mic for Brian. For Brian, though.
Good Lord, yes.
Can you hear me better now?
Second.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, but we're still chipping in $15.
Okay. So I just bear with me just a minute or two. I'm humbled and honored with the trust you've emboldened me with to serve as mayor. It's going to be fun. As I move into a different seat, I do need to say, you know, I want to thank Pam for all she did over the years for the city. No one can question her dedication to the city, but she has decided to move on and so must we. We have a lot of work ahead of us, a lot, but we must move forward. And I know that each one of us is committed to the city and doing what we think is in the best interest of the citizens and residents of our city, even though we have different viewpoints and different perspectives on the issues that we face. We all care deeply about the city. I know that's true of all the six of us, true of our city manager, it's true of all of our staff, even though we have disagreements at times. You know, from my perspective, with the benefit of hindsight over the last few weeks, you know, I think I've realized that we as a council haven't been as perfect as we could have been, and we've got some areas we need to work on. And I know that I'm committed, and I'm sure you are as well, to addressing those as we go forward. I just want to close by saying, you know, it occurred to me over the last few days that, you know, in my other role as a board president for another board, the theme I chose for this year was building common ground, because that organization, not unlike our city, faces a lot of challenges, internal and external. And my approach to it has been, you can't start building common ground on the small little issues, you're not going to be able to build common ground on anything. So I'm excited for us to start building that common ground to move us forward. We've got a lot to tackle, but I'm confident we are all up to the challenge and look forward to working with each of you on that. So with that, thank you. And now we move to the selection of a mayor pro tem, since that position is now vacant with your decision to elect me. So with that, we will open up the floor to nominations for one of us to serve as mayor pro tem. Councilmember Cavalieri.
Thank you, Mayor. At this time, I would like to nominate Stephanie Vignell for the mayor pro tem position, ending 2021.
Second.
None. All those in favor of Councilmember Vignell serving as mayor pro tem, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Anyone abstaining? Congratulations, Councilmember Vignell. You are deputy mayor.
Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Yep. Congratulations.
So, thank you. If you administer the oath of office.
Will do. If you could raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Stephanie Vignell.
I, Stephanie Vignell.
Having been duly elected.
Having been duly elected.
To the office.
To the office.
Of Mayor Pro Tem.
Of Mayor Pro Tem.
Of the City of Mill Creek.
Of the City of Mill Creek.
Do I solemnly swear.
Do I solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully.
That I will faithfully.
Impartially.
Impartially.
And to the best of my ability.
And to the best of my ability.
Perform the duties of my office.
Perform the duties of my office.
As prescribed by law.
As prescribed by law.
And that I will support and maintain.
And that I will support and maintain.
The laws and ordinances of the City of Mill Creek.
The laws and ordinances of the City of Mill Creek.
And the laws and constitution.
And the laws and constitution.
Of the State of Washington and the United States of America.
Of the State of Washington and the United States of America.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Naomi.
If you wanted to say something.
Yeah, Mayor, can I say something real quick?
Absolutely.
I just want to take a brief moment and thank my colleagues for their belief in me and their support in nominating me for this position tonight. And I also want to second what Mayor Holzkohl has said. We have a lot of work to do. And I know amongst us all that we can find common ground and that we can work together to move our city forward. And I am very excited and very honored for this opportunity. And I want to thank you.
I look forward to working with you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
With that, we move on to old business. The extension of the public health emergency proclamation for COVID-19. Michael, this is your agenda item.
Thank you, Mayor. Congratulations to you and Mayor Pro Tem Vignell on this election. I can represent on behalf of all of our team that we are very excited about the future. And I believe that we are headed in a direction that only the sky is the limit in terms of what we can all accomplish together. Moving on to the proclamation, the old business, as you know, the last time I asked for council to vote in support of extending the proclamation, you gave me that authority through September 1st, and that's today. And what I'm asking for is an extension of that proclamation consistent with what the Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader, Speaker of the House, and House Minority Leader, in conjunction with Governor Jay Inslee, have agreed to extend statutory waivers and suspensions until October 1st, 2020. I would ask for the council to give us a similar extension, and we will be monitoring all the health criteria and data and orders from the governor as it relates thereto. With the most conservative view, if we're able to end that early, that we'll bring that to the next available council meeting. Hopefully this we'll have turned a corner by October 1st, but I would ask respectfully for the council to extend the proclamation originally that you voted on April 18th, retroactive to March 20th of this year, to be extended to October 1st, 2020.
Anyone have any questions for Michael? Councilmember Todd.
Well, before we get into a motion, I'd just like to suggest that we consider October 6th. October 1st is after the fifth Tuesday, which we might not meet. It would be convenient if we went clear through October 6th, so we'd have gives Michael the full month plus a couple of days. So we don't go that limbo thing where we have to make a decision on the 22nd to extend them to the 6th anyway. So I would just recommend for practicality, we do that. And as city manager said earlier, you can always end it early, but extending is problematic.
Second.
I'm not sure that was a motion. Was that a motion, Councilmember Todd?
Well, that was a suggestion. If somebody else would like to make the motion, that'd be good. I was just throwing it out there for discussion. I can be talked out of it.
Well, I'll make the motion. I think that Councilmember Todd makes a lot of sense with that, and you know, that we wouldn't do anything until the next meeting anyway. So I guess the motion would state that to extend the emergency proclamation until October 6th, 2020.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Anyone abstaining? Motion passes 6-0. Moving on, proposed new initiatives. At the outset, I want to get the council's thought. This is a new topic on our agendas, and I wanted to kind of explain my rationale and thinking for this and get your thoughts of what we should try it out in the next few months. The first example that came to my mind of where this would come into play is, for instance, Councilmember Cavallari back in July at one of the meetings asked us during a report to support a letter that was written by another mayor. And we had a lengthy discussion, but we didn't have any of the materials in front of us. We didn't have the actual letter. And so I'm not sure we had a fully informed discussion, which wasn't fair to the council and wasn't fair to Councilmember Cavallari. So my hope would be with this proposed new initiatives that if a council member has something they want to bring to the council, rather than in a report, bring it to myself or Councilmember Vigneault prior to Thursday preceding the meeting, so then we can then get it on the agenda, discuss it with the city manager. If there's any background materials that could go with it, we'll get those assembled to go in the packet so that when we have it, we then put it on the new initiatives agenda, discuss it at the next meeting, and have it come to a consensus as to whether or not it's something we want to move forward with. So again, trying to find a way to make sure that we're all on the same page as the direction that we're giving the city manager. And the other example that I was thinking about where this could come in to be beneficial, to be quite honest, is for the city manager to bring to us ideas that he and his staff had. Without getting into specific examples, I can remember a couple of situations in the past several years where I think there was some tension between council and staff, because staff got a ways down the road with an idea that they had before it got brought to us to get a consensus on whether or how we should move forward. So my hope is that by putting this on a proposed new initiative topic, we can have that conversation early, get a consensus if there's a majority of us that want to go forward. And if there is, then whenever we decide to bring it back, it would then be an item of new business. So again, trying to make our reports truly reports, but trying to create a mechanism so that we can make sure we get consensus amongst the 6 or soon to be 7 of us, so that Michael has no confusion of what our direction is that we're giving. Thoughts, comments, concerns? No? Councilmember Cavallari.
I would just say I would support that. I think that is it's a great way to solve a lot of potential problems going forward. I think it's transparent and it's informative. So yeah, I 100% support it. I think it's a great idea, and your first one as mayor, so I 100% support it. Thanks for bringing it up.
Thank you. Well, we'll see how it goes for a few months, and hopefully it will facilitate some conversations on some of the topics, and we can make sure we're all on the same page. So under that, this the new first item I've put on there that I wanted to discuss with the council is whether or not we think we should spend a few weeks or working on updating the governance manual. The governance manual was last adopted when it was signed by Councilmember Todd and Mayor back in 2011, I believe. But it is a bit outdated, and I think it needs to be updated. So, for instance, the end of the governance manual, it has the city's mission and vision and values. But we never amended the governance manual after 2017, when with our prior city manager, we adopted a whole new set of protocol, mission statement, and vision statement, and core values. So my thought was that we convene possibly a work group. Well, let me back up. There's examples of how other cities deal with some of these issues and governance that I think have some newer ideas that may not be incorporated in our governance manual that I think are worthwhile for us to discuss. The city manager has some examples of three cities that provide some different ways that city handles these things, cities handle these. One thing that I would like to hear discussion on, we've talked about this for a few years but never acted on it, is creating some kind of process for issues to, whether it be with the city manager, a staff person, or a council member, for issues to get aired and vetted so that they don't boil over and become critical issues and rather than issues that can be worked through. And we've talked about that in the aftermath of Rebecca's departure, but we never did anything about that. So these other jurisdictions have different ways they handle it. You know, Snohomish County has an ethics commission. One jurisdiction has a commissioner that acts as a fact finder. I think it would behoove us to begin looking at, is there something we can incorporate into our governance manual in the form of updating? So that's kind of the general thought I had. I'm interested in your input. My thought would be for a process would that next week, the city attorney could include in our materials a copy of the governance manual, as well as the examples from the three other cities. And then either next week or the following or the next meeting, we have a study session to go through them, identifying areas that we think should be updated or things that we like or in other governance manuals that we think could be included. And then possibly decide whether or not we want a subgroup or a work group of the council to kind of take it from there and work for a couple of weeks on a proposed update to the governance manual to bring back to the full council for consideration, maybe sometime later in October. So that's why I put that agenda item on there. I want to get your thoughts. Is this a good idea, bad idea, something we should move forward with now, later? Floor is open.
I think it's a great idea. And it's a good time to afford it right now. We're looking at making a lot of changes moving forward. We have a lot of opportunity for growth and rethinking of processes, and now's the time to be looking at how we govern those decisions going forward.
Councilmember Cavalieri, I saw your hand up.
Thanks, Mayor. I like the idea, but I just would be curious and to ask city manager and city staff how much available time they would have at this point now with the looming budget, now with the the interviews coming up now, just added to the pile. I just, do they have the time to do this at this point, or could we table it to maybe start maybe December 1 when the budget's completed or something like that? Maybe just get a review of the manual now and take a peek at it. I can honestly say, I don't think I have ever, some people have referred to it, but I don't think I've ever used the governance manual. And I'm just being honest. Usually most of us probably refer to the MRSC or other means. And so I know it's probably important, but I think we have more important business right now, but I don't think it's, I'm not trying to minimize the importance of it. I would just put it to city staff. I'm on board if they are.
That's a valid concern, but to be quite honest, I was thinking that a subgroup of the council was going to carry the laboring oar. My thought would be we have a study session, and then staff would certainly have input, but my hope would be that two or three of us working with the city manager after we have a study session of the examples from other jurisdictions could then work over a couple of weeks and put together a proposed update or so, a set of proposals for us to consider. Staff would have input, but I was trying to avoid there being too much, I don't want to say too much staff involvement. I don't want to detract too much from the staff's, you're right, Vince, that they're going to be busy with the budget. Councilmember Todd?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is reminiscent of back in 2010, 2011. I'm going to draw on Mark's memory because he's better than mine probably, but it wasn't a similar situation, but it was the same kind of aha moment that we needed documentation and understanding about the processes we used as council to help be part of the council manager team, just like we're going through right now. And so that's at that time, staff went off and found, I think it was Bothell's that is the genesis or kind of the core of the manual we have now. And as Mayor Holzklop points out, that's really old because we never revisited it. I think your suggestion of looking to say, okay, what's best practices now, almost 10 years later, I think so. I've heard suggestions like Kirkland's got a good one, or Bellevue's got a good one, or Snohomish County. If we can make it so that council is doing the reading, council is doing a lot of the work, and doesn't rely a lot on staff, I would like us to keep moving it forward so we don't forget the moment and how important it is. But as much as we say, oh, we're going to do this in a subcommittee, at some point we're going to turn and say, well, staff, would you take this red line and manage all this stuff? Yeah. And I appreciate that that might be a huge load. So we need to be careful we don't overdrive the system with staff. But I'd like to think we at least kind of get started with thinking about it in the background and then just keep it on the agenda, keep moving forward. And I'm fine with a subgroup to do it. Two or three people want to work on it as a committee, a subcommittee, and then bring it back to the group as a whole. That could be good work. Thanks.
Councilmember Vignell, Mayor Pro Tem Vignell.
Thank you, Mayor. I actually want to point out, everyone has great points, and we do need to make sure that the staff is able to be working on their budget for us. I think it's really important. I really like the way Mayor Holzklop brought up that the council start working on this as a subgroup, because I've read through this. I read through it when I was first appointed, and I've taken the time over the past week, and I've read through every page of it again. And I think it's very important and very valid that we go through here and that we understand as a council how we're supposed to act and our interactions with each other, and it covers interactions with the city manager. And I just think it's extremely important that in order for us to be effective and work together and to work with the city manager, that we go through here and we understand what's in here and update it if we see things that need to be corrected for the future. And I think it'll make us be a better council, and it'll help our working relationship with the city manager so that we can be more effective as well. Thanks.
What about this suggestion? What if either for next week, or it depends on, I'm not sure what all Michael is anticipating having on the agenda, but if we could have an initial study session where we circulate the examples in the governance manual and just have a study session where we sit down and talk about it for a half hour, 45 minutes. And from that discussion, we might have a better sense of what the scope is of the changes we may want to make. And then we can decide from there, do we want to fast track it? Do we want to put it into a work group? How do we want to handle it? But I'd suggest, if you all are open to it, let's start looking at it and then figure out how to, the timing and how we best go about implementing it. That work?
I like that idea.
Okay, so I'll work with the Mayor Pro Tem and the city manager and the city attorney to get the materials together, and I'll coordinate with Michael on whether or not this is on the agenda for next week or 3 weeks or 3 weeks from now. Councilmember Bond.
Thank you. Is part of this process going to involve us working on the way we communicate with staff, union leadership, directors? When I was looking at this, I kind of was thinking about some of the communication challenges that are in place with us being a part-time city council, with oftentimes us being focused on the heavy lift, the budget or whatever, and some things get I think we could improve communication between staff and the council. And I don't know if this is the vehicle to begin addressing how that happens, but when communication is broken and people aren't being heard, they ignore it for a while until it's bad enough and then they explode. And if you can hear things earlier and work on fixing and bringing healing to things that could be fixed, you don't get to the explosion. Is this a vehicle that we could look at that? Do others feel like there's a communication level, something that could be improved? I'm not sure, but that's what I was thinking of as I was looking at this, was that the communication element of how we interact with the directors, the staff, our city manager, how they express themselves to us if they have concerns.
From my perspective, I was intending all that to be on the table and open for discussion as we look at this.
Okay. Yeah, I would like us to, the committee or whatever, to recognize the communication challenges of our form of government and see if we can't find some way of improving.
Councilman McBride, I saw your hand go up again. Unmute, please. You're muted, Michael.
There we go. Now I got it. Really astute, Mark. That was great. On one level, if you just read this and go, oh, it's just about processes, it doesn't cover that. But if we think through the processes with observations and knowledge about what goes wrong or what could go wrong, like you said, nipping it in the bud and correcting it early, maybe there's more words we put in here, or at least in the process of going through and reviewing it, we've got some better processes in place that help us. Because you're right, you're exactly right, Mark. That's communication early and with the same ground rules for everybody really would help. And maybe that some of these other cities have solved that. You know, Bellevue's a council manager government, a lot bigger government. How do they deal with it? Or, you know, other local governments. And I think that's some of the examples that Mayor Holzclaw and Attorney Degginger had drug up for us to look at. Thanks.
Any further comments? Okay, so we'll work with Michael on getting the materials out and either getting this on the agenda for the 8th or the 22nd. Item G, so this request is from Terry Ryan, the County Aerospace Economic Development Director. And here's what the request was. As you know, Boeing is in the midst of deciding what to do with the 787 line, whether or not to move the portion that's in Everett over to South Carolina. The county is working hard to convince Boeing to maintain the status quo. I'm not sure how optimistic they are about that outcome, but that is what their goal is. But their bigger picture is for the county to show support to Boeing, so that regardless of what their decision is on the 787 line, working to get a commitment from Boeing to build in Everett the replacement jet for the 737, whenever they may get to that. So his specific ask was, they are going around to all the cities in Snohomish County and requesting that the cities allow the county to use their logos on the materials that the county submits to Boeing and part of their efforts to keep the 787 line here. So it's not asking to sign on to a specific letter or anything. It's just they want to use the logos to show the support of the cities behind the county's efforts to keep Boeing here. So to keep the 787 line here. So I wanted to bring that up to see if there's any objection. I told them I'd bring it up to the council tonight. I don't know that we need a formal motion. Councilmember Todd?
I think Steckler was first. Let him go.
Okay, sorry. Councilmember Steckler?
I don't think anybody here has any problem with supporting and using our logo to support keeping Boeing here. I just think that anytime you give a carte blanche on using your logo, that's not a good idea. We're more than happy to make it available, but we would have to see its context, you know, before it's published. That's what we would ask. But yes, we are. I think we'd be more than supportive of keeping it here, but we just would need to see the context of how it's being utilized.
Yeah, I'm kind of at the same place. I'm not sure I want to give them power of attorney to use my signature. But if you tell me what the rally is about, I might show up at the rally. I worry a little bit about this. We've had similar kinds of things. Think of an example. I probably can't think of a good example. It's a little bit difficult because we, you know, a mayor of Everett can sign as the mayor of Everett, and they may have certain rights to use their logo. We run into this with our council manager form of government. We've done this with community transit. We're looking for general support for community transit that goes back to Washington, D.C., and do a federal grant application for the Swift Green Line. Well, before they put our name on that, they need to convince our council that our name can go on that. So if the letter that the county's going to put together says all the cities of Snohomish County are willing to kick in 10% of their budget to compensate Boeing for extra jobs, I think we would go, not so sure. If the statement is all of the cities in Snohomish County would sure hope their jobs stay here, that's a true statement. And somewhere in between, I don't know what they're going to do. So I think Steckler brings it up. I think Councilmember Steckler brings it up right. It's a little bit weird. I know for expedience, the county would like to have this all lined up so they don't have the problem of Mill Creek being the odd duck who can't respond because we only meet September 22nd and October 6th. And they're trying to get the letter out by October 30 or September 31st, 30th. So I get the logistics problem, but I wish it was more specific what we were talking about.
Thanks. And I did ask him if he has anything in particular in mind, and he didn't. Not offhand, not yet. Councilmember Cavallari.
I guess I would share everybody's concern, but if the message is just like you kind of, like the mayor just laid out, in support of the 787 line not going to South Carolina, I mean, I think they're just looking for support and kind of a rally cry from the cities. And I would 100% support that. I mean, yeah, and like Councilmember Todd says, not a blank check, but, you know, they have it's going to hurt us just as worse. So 100% support the idea of doing something in collaboration with all the other cities. Absolutely.
Shall I communicate to Terry that we are supportive of Boeing and would consider lending our logo, but would like the opportunity to see what it's going to be placed on first before it's used?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we would request last right of refusal on how it's to be utilized.
Yeah.
Okay. I can certainly do that.
Mayor?
Yes.
Well, I'm in favor of this. I think I probably need to go on the record and possibly abstain from this decision because my husband does work for a supplier of Boeing and is directly impacted on whether or not they keep their planes here mm-hmm. or not. So I guess I'm kind of unclear if I ethically should be able to vote on that or not. So I just want to throw that out there to everyone so that you're aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And I wasn't, I don't think we necessarily needed to take a vote. I think I've got the sense of where everyone's at. I think, tell me if I'm wrong, that we're in agreement that we're open to using the logo. We want to show our support for Boeing. We'd just like the opportunity to see whatever it's going to be put on before it goes out. We're just not going to grant carte blanche to put in our logo on anything. And I will encourage him that as soon as he has something specific that he wants to use the logo for, to bring it to us or bring it to me or Mayor Pro Tem so we can get it in front of you. Fair enough? Okay, moving along to item H. City Manager, were you going to touch on this?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I will. I was having a brief conversation with Mayor Holtzclaw regarding really the outgrowth of our retreat in the spring. And there was the idea that we would alternate between study sessions and action item-driven agendas. We still think it's an excellent idea, but what we do have is a lot of work coming down the pike that we would like to have the flexibility of having both presentations and study sessions and possible action items on the same agenda. A good example will come up later when we talk about the CARES Act funding. I would hate to think that we weren't moving along to meet our October 31st deadline because of a certain inflexibility with regard to our structure. So I wanted to hear council's thoughts about that in relationship to the idea that we originated at the retreat. And we, you as the administration, to know that we have not forgotten about that. There is a lot going on, and promises to be even more on the agenda, which brings me to the second point. I am not yet there, and what I'm looking at is the possibility that we may have to consider, particularly as we get into later in the year, unless we're going to have an extra packed agenda and a long meeting, we may want to consider our third week as an alternative for a council meeting, an additional council meeting, depending on the work that's coming up. I don't have a specific agenda in mind or a specific, but I just wanted to get a heads up and get thoughts from the council on whether there would be such flexibility as we move forward into the fall. We have, we're putting together a team quickly. We hope that in addition to Mr. Ballantyne be joining us, we're moving quickly to fill both the police chief and the director of public works vacancies. And there's a budget coming down the pike, and there's going to be discussions and additional work that's going to be coming up as well as we do that. So we just want to get your thoughts on that.
Any comments, anyone? This is something we've talked about off and on for a couple of years of switching or having alternating the agendas, but we haven't made any decisions. Councilmember Steckler.
Well, first of all, in regards to all the public items mentioned, whenever a decision needs to be made, I think that always takes a priority in my mind. So if there's something coming down the pike where we need to come to the council and get a decision, I am all for making that a priority to bring to our session. If we can maintain the study session, great, we can do both. If you have to make a decision, I'd rather give up a study session than pass on an important decision that would affect our city or our citizens. And I know we have some heavy lifting ahead of us in a very short period of time. I was anticipating some extra meetings. So I think the ability to have the third meeting for me personally, I can't speak for everyone else, I would support that, if not a Saturday also. But I mean, I think we need to reflect the people that are working, council members and their work schedules, and be respectful of those. But I support it. That's my comment.
Any other thoughts, comments? Councilmember Todd.
So I think part of the idealistic view long time ago, when I first joined council, was much more strictly study session once a month, action items twice a month. And that had the benefit for staff not having to turn around stuff from a Tuesday night direction from council and bringing it back the following Tuesday, which meant it really had to be in the city manager's hand by the next day because it had to go in the packet. So it was a way to alleviate the crisis that happened from one Tuesday to the next. And so ideally, if you could say we're gonna have in-depth study sessions once a month and action every other week, it made for a smoother operations. But we found over the years, and we in fact changed our governing legislation that said we can do action items anytime we want to, because as Councilmember Steckler points out, there's time when you don't want to hold stuff up just because we're waiting to do action. So I think it's still a good ideal to get back to. But if staff isn't ready to go there, I'm not anxious to force it. And I agree that we've got a lot of extra stuff to do. If we need to have extra meetings or workshops for budget stuff in particular, that's entirely appropriate, it seems. Thanks.
Michael, do you have enough direction to move forward?
Yep, we do, and thank you. We appreciate the flexibility.
Okay, with that, we are moving. Thank you for concluding our first round of proposed new initiatives. With that, we'll move into the study session for tonight. Chief Eastman or City Manager? City Manager,
yes. Thank you, Mayor Holtzclaw. Chief Eastman will be presenting on this momentarily. It was one of the first questions I asked when I came on board was where we were at in the city of Mill Creek with regard to body-worn cameras. Where was our city council in this regard? having initiated a policy in the East Coast, as well as body-worn cameras in the state of New York, that police department found it to be of tremendous value. What I've heard here is that there is an issue with public records law that is being worked through the state legislature. But what I really wanted was for Chief Eastman to present to you and for to get your feedback as we put together the budget and the capital plan for the fall. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page and make certain that we're not getting ahead of our council. So this is an opportunity for our policymakers to share their thoughts with us after this presentation. We're either going to actively pursue this for the fall budget, or we're going to wait for certain other measures to take place before we do so. Chief Eastman? Chief, we can't hear you. Chief, we still cannot hear you.
That looks better.
So you're breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. How's my voice now?
It's spotty again, sir.
Is my voice okay?
Yes, it is. We'll let you know if it
breaks. All right. Give me just. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. I don't have the finest computer. So I just want to echo what Michael said. What the mayor said earlier resonated with me about staff not wanting to get ahead of the process. So this is not presumptuous on our part. This really is an update. I wanted to just share some updates on technology, share some updates on the Public Records Act, and then talk about some possible next steps. So just for the council and the public's information, we have not even had an internal conversation beyond the police department as about this program. So we still have to have that conversation with our management team and talk about the financial impacts. You'll notice at attachment D, there was a long list of considerations that we would need to work through and questions that we would need to answer before we were able to move forward with this program like this. We're already working on getting some cost estimates, but my goal is if there's interest that we would come back, if it's the city manager's will, to provide a more in-depth presentation as to what features we would be have as part of the system and the pros and cons, and then what the costs would be. So let me just share some information with you. You may remember that back in 2016, we did a trial and evaluation. We had three officers wearing body-worn cameras for 3 months, and they were operating under some temporary restrictions under the Public Records Act, the biggest of which was that you had to be a party to the incident in order to get a copy of the body-worn camera video. As I'll explain later, that was not enacted permanently. We hear a lot about transparency and accountability, and body-worn cameras certainly allow us to increase both. This effort is supported in the letter that I attached to the agenda from the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs as a means to increase transparency and accountability with the public. I don't think it's a stretch to think that this will be one of the recommendations that either comes at the state level, at the federal level, or both. So my goal is to be ahead of the curve, and we'll only do that if we're able to do that in a responsible way. we're talking about the equipment a little bit. The equipment is increasingly smaller. It's getting more high tech. This camera is about the size of a deck of cards. Lots of improvements in video, eliminating blur. As you know, one of the aspects of body-worn camera is what they call a pre-event buffer that it records up to 2 minutes before a camera is activated, so that if the officer is not able to activate it right away, that there's still a period of time where the recording is captured. And it can get as high tech as being able to see where an officer is at when they activate their camera, and for a command person to be able to actually live stream their video on the supervisor's computer screen. So not that we have to have all those options, but that's kind of where technology has taken us. Redaction is a big deal, and has requires a lot of staff time and technology. The good news is that that is also improving, and there are systems out there now that will actually automatically identify faces and license plates and even the computer screen in the officer's patrol car and automatically redact those things. Still requires some staff time, and it's not 100%, but it certainly is one thing that may be able to reduce the need for staff time to review and redact body-worn camera recordings. So public records, not a lot has changed and updated. The PRA does not allow the release of recordings that are recorded inside a medical facility that contain any public or protected health information, or inside of a residence where there may be privacy concerns. So intimate images, a person, a deceased body, a minor child, the communication from a victim or witness is involved in domestic violence incident. If we were to take them to a shelter, then that the location of that shelter would not have to be released. The law requires that somebody asking for recording specifically one of these four things: either identify the name of the person or persons involved, provide the case number, or provide the date and time and location of the incident, or identify a law enforcement officer involved in the incident. This restriction is not particularly helpful because it would be very easy just to ask if you got the names of all the police officers, just ask for all the recordings of all the officers. So that's probably not a big deterrent. There are provisions where certain people or entities can get body-worn recordings at no cost. And so that's somebody directly involved, a person or attorney representing a person in the video in a criminal case, or the executive director of either the Washington State Commission on African American Affairs, Asian Pacific American Affairs, or Hispanic Affairs, or lastly, an attorney in a civil action involving the denial or federal rights. So we can't, we wouldn't charge for any costs involving a request for those videos. The PRA does allow us to delete videos after 60 days, and we would be set up rules that would identify when those would be retained. And just generally, anytime that we got a request for a video, we would keep it, and until that request was either processed or denied. If there was an internal affairs or professional standards investigation, a use of force incident, and of course, if it was evidence in a criminal case.
Scott?
Yes, please.
So one of the worries and issues I've been hearing from a lot of agencies and even the smaller agencies that have adopted the body cams is, aside from the privacy and union implications and bargaining issues, it is the costs involved with public disclosure requests, maintaining and recording and deleting and redacting, and it's quickly And one of the concerns is that Washington is going to adopt additional rules where all of it, where whenever the officer puts that on his chest, it's going to be public disclosure. So I just want to say that going ahead, because it's a Pandora's box. I mean, at first I wasn't on board, and then I saw the great evidence factor, and it cleared a lot of officers more than it harmed or hindered. But I want all of us to be aware that there's a lot of money involved with maintaining and utilizing this technology as well.
Yeah, there is. And I'll talk about some of that cost recovery here in just a moment. The reactions, as Councilmember Cavalieri said, we would not only be doing video redactions, but we may be redacting audio. For example, if the faces of the folks in the video, we could by redacting those, we may redact audio that would be protected. For example, talking about a health condition or a domestic violence incident. So also to Councilmember Cavalieri's point, the biggest deterrent really is the ability to charge for reasonable costs. And these are actual costs. I'll get into that here in just a minute, but we can, under the PRA, charge for reasonable costs, except for those exemptions that I mentioned earlier, for redacting, altering, pixelating, suppressing, or otherwise obscuring any portion of a body-worn recording prior to disclosure. That would require us to do a cost study to determine actual costs. This is a little different than like other public records, where we're able to charge a standard costs. Mm-hmm. And that staff time would not be counted towards our JLARC reporting. So just some next steps. What we'll be working on here in the police department is identifying our equipment needs and getting cost estimates for that. That actually, we had a web meeting this morning in reference to that. Identifying whether we can absorb that additional staff time with current staffing levels. So we'll be doing a workload analysis and then estimating in conjunction with estimating what the staff time might be. And we're getting a lot of real firsthand information. We're talking to Bellingham and Monroe, and our next conversation will be with Linwood. We're going to need to work on policy development and what that implementation process would look like, and then deciding what we need, what we can afford, and then coming back to you to explain what the price tag would be and how we would pay for it. And so I wanted to make this quick, just a really kind of a high level information sharing, just letting you know that if you feel it's appropriate and the city manager does as well, then I'm happy to come back with more detail and be very specific about what it is that we would be interested in purchasing and what that would take. So I'm open for any questions.
Councilmember Steckler.
Hey, thanks, Chief. A couple things. There's cost issues involved in this, but I'd be curious about the other two issues that are involved with this. The protection of the officers by having this video to protect them, and the protection to the individuals that these cameras provide. And when you come back to us, there's always going to be cost issues, but if you can provide us any kind of information as to, you know, what these cameras do for police departments and helping, you know, if they can help protect officers and you know, by that I mean, you know, protect them to show when they're being falsely accused. And I got to be honest, if there's ever I don't even think about our force, but if ever there was an officer who was doing something wrong, I mean, what is the value of these cameras, and how, if there's any kind of information you could share with us, that would be really helpful to put against the cost, because I'm sure there are some numbers or trends or something that you could share with us. I'd really like to see that.
So there's no doubt that these cameras have prevented litigation where folks were suing, were showed the video, and dropped their case. It does absolutely protect good professionals acting appropriately against false allegations. And to be honest, if it catches someone doing something inappropriate, that's fine with me, and we hold them accountable and we get rid of them. I'm a big fan of these cameras. I want to see them happen. It's too bad that well-intended rules like the public request, which are good, have unintended consequences of making something so reasonable as this somewhat cost prohibitive. And that's the reason we've been holding back for so long. And I would say continue to move forward. I support this, but I don't want to be the tip of the spear. I want to let Seattle and Everett, Kirkland, Tacoma, and some of these bigger agencies work out the bugs. We can learn from their successes and mistakes, the savings. Maybe there's ways to partner up with folks on how to do the redacting and preparing this stuff for release. I don't know, but I don't necessarily want to be the tip of the spear on this, but I certainly think it's reasonable to be preparing for this. It's going to be inevitable, I think. More and more the public actually assumes that there are cameras. In fact, they're surprised to find out there's not cameras in place. And then they wonder, well, if you don't have cameras, why not? What are you covering up? And then you start going in with a lengthy speech about the Public Records Act, and they're kind of glaze over and they don't understand and they just still think it's weird. So the public does expect law enforcement to have these. They've grown up watching cops and TV shows. They assume that all officers have cameras, and they're actually quite surprised to find out that many do not.
Just one more quick question. Chief, we started the process. We can't hear you.
You're working, Chief.
We can't hear you.
You went underwater.
So I don't know if Scott knows we didn't hear him, but I'll tell him now we didn't hear him.
In the reduction of complaints.
Scott?
Your microphone isn't working.
Just guessing, would it help if Scott was closer to his microphone? I think it's clipped off because he's got an automatic level set probably.
Okay, and I just sent you, Chief, the call-in number via email. So if you just mute your desktop, you can call in.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I think the question I've got, maybe some others already know, and Scott can chime in later. I think Mark and Vince might know. I'm just curious, what other Washington State police or sheriffs are doing cameras yet? I got the sense that maybe, like, I think Mark Vaughn's comments were right. I don't really want to be the tip of the spear. I'd like to be a reasonable early adopter, but I don't want to be the bleeding edge thing. What have you heard? You guys are kind of in the business. Who's using them and how's it working? Are we still sort of toward the front end? Because in 2016, we kind of waited at the council. It's too early. It's not doing yet.
Mark or Vince, did you have a response to you?
The only agency that I'm aware of using cameras right now is the State Patrol.
Okay. Do you have any idea how long they've been doing that?
I think it's been about 5 years.
So they've got some history with this, and they might know how bad this redaction problem is. But they're pulling people over, and they're not going to DV calls, which makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, State Patrol mostly uses them as evidence in their DUI processes.
Okay.
Any other questions for the chief tonight? I don't see
Michael. Are you folks able to hear me?
Yeah, now,
now we can.
Okay, I'm sorry, I had to call in. So I apologize for my computer problems. I was unmuted, but so this is actually pretty well-established technology.
Yeah.
There are agencies that have been using cameras in some form for almost a decade. And so we have a lot of resources to draw from. We've already been in conversation with a number of agencies. We'll continue to get more. I don't remember if it's Councilmember Bond or Councilmember Cavalieri's point, we've no intention of reinventing the wheel just because we don't have to. The policy, we have good access to good policy. We have good access for the to benefit from the lessons learned by other agencies, what worked for them, what didn't. And we're really, it's easy to look at Seattle or even Linwood. We're really having good conversations with Monroe, who are similarly sized, because they'll have similar staffing shortages or limitations. So, we're going to be able to also benefit from technologies getting better, and we have to be able to use less staff time. But so our goal when we come back to you is to be able to give you that analysis, and so we can walk into any sort of review or approval process, just basically understanding what we're asking.
Councilmember Todd and Councilmember Cavalieri.
Yeah, thanks. So I think, I'm just guessing, but I think that the capital cost of buying the equipment is the small number in this business case. I think it's the ongoing cost of the redaction and all that stuff that makes this so expensive. It's the process in our state is kind of difficult. So I think that's the staff time and talking to the lawyers about public records requests, redactions, and things like that that kills this. That doesn't kill it, but it makes it, that's more it. Well, I think I encourage us to make sure we look at the whole business case of what it costs to operate, not just the cost of the cameras. I think you're right, Chief, that the technology is there, pretty easy, but I think our state has made it difficult to do what people kind of expect, because it can go awry where somebody could, I think one of your slides, you know, if I can identify the name of the person in the incident, and if I can identify the date and time and who the officer was, and can I get all that kind of stuff from a police blotter and just inundate you guys with stuff for entertainment purposes. That's what I kind of worry about. We've seen people doing that kinds of things. Maybe I'm wrong, Chief. Go ahead.
No, but the good news is that for that, those type of requests, we'll be able to recoup our costs. We can charge for the actual cost of the staff time to do that work.
Oh, okay.
What is actually the bigger burden here is that every recording that involves an arrest is evidence. And so before that goes to the prosecutor's office, and we've got to work this out with the prosecutor's office, it's one of the things on our list, is does that need to be redacted before it goes, before it's provided to the defense as discovery? I mean, should the defense get a video of a naked child because it's evidence? You know, these are some of those kind of policy questions. I'll give you one example. Monroe watches every video involving a crime and then notifies the prosecutor, who then gets an injunction to allow the police department to redact it before it's provided for discovery. That's a lot. That's a lot of moving parts. And so we've got to work through that. I'm not trying. I hope I haven't painted too rosy a picture. This is actually challenging and will require a lot of work, but we're committed to doing that analysis and that information gathering so that we can give you a very clear picture of what. might look like with this program in place.
Thanks.
So I believe Spokane County has been using them for a couple of years now, to answer Councilmember Todd's question before. The second thing is I would probably, if not ask or hope that Chief, maybe we'll go down the path of maybe trying to find grant money for this year, because I'm sure it exists, or even maybe the second generation stuff, whether it's from State Patrol or other agencies that are using it. I think if we're going to launch this at some point, you know, I mean, we've done it before with other agencies, tasers, or, you know, purchase handguns, and, you know, agencies do that all the time. So it's all relevant. That's the only thing with grant money, but I do support, I think, like Mark was saying, that you'll find that it probably helps more than it hurts in some way or another. But again, there's a lot of cost with it, but I support it either way.
There were DOJ grants in 17, 19, and our hope is that they'll do that in 2021. And I think with if there's a year that we may see some grants to support this nationwide, I think we're going to be looking at it next year. And that grant, by the way, was a 50-50. The grants in the past were 50-50 split.
Michael, did I see your hand up a minute ago?
Yes, you did, Mayor. So what I'm hearing is to keep moving forward, but to get more specific about costs and challenges and resistances, especially given where we're at in the state of Washington. So we're going to go back. There is absolutely the initial capital cost, I think, pales in comparison to the ongoing expenses, including the work within the department itself to maintain chain of custody and to be able to retrieve or call that data up, unless there's a particular protocol that the Snohomish County prosecuting attorney's office has for the police department to follow. So we're going to go back and get more data. What I'm hearing is that there is interest, but tell us more. And we'll go back and do our homework and come back with another installment of this.
Can I just say one more thing, Mayor?
Yes.
And also with that homework assignment, Michael, that we also ensure what the legislature and the PDC has in the hopper. Because it's my understanding one of the deterrents that other agencies are saying is that its language is coming down the pike where it's going to read that the moment the officer clocks on duty, that's all subject to public disclosure. So that's one of the rubs.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief, for the presentation. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for your patience.
Moving on to the consent agenda. This evening we have City Council meeting minutes of the regular meeting on July 28th, 2020, and the special meeting minutes of the special meeting on August 18th, 2020. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All those in favor? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Consent agenda is approved. Moving on to reports. Briefly, I attended the call with the mayors and tribal leaders last week. The areas that were highlighted are the numbers, fortunately, with COVID are trending down. They're still not down. I think our threshold is 25 cases per 1,000 over 2 weeks, around there. We're up in the 50s still as of last week, but that was an improvement from the 80s or 90s a couple weeks ago. So it's trending in the right direction, but still not there. The county executive is going to be reconvening the HART committee. So Mayor Pro Tem, I may be calling on you to help out with that in coming weeks, but the reconvening it to specifically deal with the homelessness issue and the need for low and low income household housing for low and no income households. And I think the date that was thrown out, Stephanie, is 9/28 for a possible meeting. I haven't seen any details on it yet. Maybe you got that email as an alternative. And then the other thing he pointed out is we've talked about all the CARES Act money. According to the executive, there's no hope in sight for any money as of right now, as of the 1st of January in 2011. So what is available now appears to be all that's is going to be available for the time being, barring something productive happening in the other Washington. So that's what I had tonight. Council Member Bond, any report?
No report.
Trying to remember the seating order. Council Member Steckler. You're on mute. John, you're on mute. There you go.
You're on mute. You want to do the right thing. Here we go. I did want to share, I got some updated census data from Michael Kidd, which is kind of interesting. Washington State is in third place overall, nationwide, 92.6% of the households counted, third state in the nation. And that was broken down by 71% self-response and 21% by census takers going door to door, 71% broken down by self-response. What's interesting is Snohomish County's self-response rate is 74.7%. And more importantly, Mill Creek is clocking in at 79.6% self-response rate on the census data, higher than Everett, higher than Linwood, higher than Bothell, higher than most states. So good news is we're getting some good activity on census, good accurate involvement. So hopefully we'll be getting some good accurate budgeting considerations for us. That's just wanted to share that. Thanks to Michael Kidd.
Thank you, John. Councilmember Cavallari, any report?
Thanks, Mayor. Just wanted to give a heads up. As a Parks Board, we decided to, since there were so many new members coming on board and COVID has restricted a lot of meetings, we decided to meet in August. And not only did we meet in August, we also participate in the Parks Tour, which those of you that are not aware, the Parks Tour identifies problematic areas, broken equipment, maintenance needs for the parks that we have in our city. So it was very successful. I'm hoping to get all that data tomorrow and tomorrow's meeting, but I just wanted to give a shout out to the Parks Board that even during COVID, even during some of the issues we face now, they all showed up, they all collaborated, they all participated, and I'm always amazed and thankful at the volunteers that we have for these committees in our city. Thanks.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to start off by giving a shout out. I was out running today and saw that Heron Park is open on schedule. So shout out to staff in the Public Works Department for their hard work in making this a reality. And I just want to ask, I wasn't sure if we were going to plan doing any type of ribbon cutting or anything, because I know it's kind of hard with COVID-19. But I thought I would just throw that out there and ask. And it looks great. I spoke to some parents while I was out there, and they are really excited about it, and it was being used, and everyone was very happy. So also, I just want to throw out there that the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club are actually working on putting together some programs for working parents to help watch your kids and to help with make sure they're on their virtual learning on time. So I just want to let everybody know, heads up if they're not aware of that, to look online to find access to that, because I know that's a concern for many parents is how are they going to work and get their kids on virtual learning at the same time. So thank you.
Councilmember Todd, any report?
Yeah, thank you. One thing from the Snohomish County Committee on Improved Transportation skit last week. Lots of talk about what's going on in various jurisdictions, but most notably, Sound Transit continues to work on their Linwood to Everett realignment project. It's not just Linwood to Everett, it's realignment of many aspects of ST3. And the expectation they're going to continue to work on that through July 21. But it's very important to us that we don't lose out. We, meaning Linwood to Everett, we as a region don't put on that priority list or get delays in our project. There's still people pushing very hard for us to get what we need. and get it in expedited fashion. And I think that the good discussion that apparently is going on, at least Paul Roberts is encouraged by it, is that they're starting to talk more about how the original legislative intent was that this was supposed to be a regional system that connected people to jobs. And for a long time, we've argued about sub-area equity. Well, Snohomish County doesn't bring in very much sales tax, so tough luck, you get the last train when we get around to it. And that's not the point of the whole system. The point was Seattle's got jobs and people are living in Lake Stevens or Everett or Lake or Mill Creek and need to get to those jobs. It really needs to be a regional system. So I'm at least encouraged that Paul was somewhat encouraged by that. Related to that, and I think Tom Rogers may be up for later on with a staff report, but we should be aware, and maybe we should as a city send the link out again. Snohomish County's been working on their light rail communities. Again, the planning that goes around those station areas, they're going to be somewhere around I-5 and 164th and I-5 and 128. They've got another survey out there. I encourage us as legislative knowledgeable folks and staff and citizens to chime in and make sure that our voices are heard about what's important, because it will impact traffic in Mill Creek in terms of how we access I-5 or access light rail, whichever is your choice. So maybe we can, I'll try to find that link, or maybe staff's got that link. We can send it back out through our media. Sound Transit, excuse me, Snohomish County has done that through various social media, but I think there might be value in having the city send it out again, some of our channels, to make sure people participate. Thank you.
City manager.
Thank you, Mayor. A real quick response to Mayor Pro Tem Vignell's question about Heron Park. We are working for the COVID-19 equivalent of a grand opening. We're borrowing from the template that we used for Exploration Park with all the obvious precautions required. We're also going to work with the Rotary Club that donated the decking for the bridge. It looks beautiful. And we want this to be another celebration of a mission accomplished for our community. So stay tuned, and we'll have more information for the council and the community accordingly. I also want to say that when I put this agenda together last Thursday, I did not know that I would be able to talk about Mr. Jeff Ballantyne as the finance director, who's come back on board to help us out with the next leg of our journey. There is some financial data that I would have put on this agenda, and with the council's permission, I've asked Jeff to be prepared to talk about the most recent revenue data that we've received.
Please.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Thank you, City Manager. I sent an email out, but I thought it'd be a good opportunity to let the public know as well that we did receive our latest sales and use tax numbers. This would represent for the month of June. They came in at $315,716, which is up 6.2% versus the same month last year. This is most likely, and we still don't have the visibility from the Department of Revenue, highly driven from the construction at the farm. But we should have that visibility soon. We are seeing that across the state and across the nation, a lot of construction projects have actually increased, and we're seeing a bit of a boom. And there's a lot of speculation that that's probably tied to the influence of CARES money incentives going to main developers and construction companies. And there's a real push to get a lot of it done now. So we're seeing that that increase. Secondly, we will be releasing the budget request out to all of the departments no later than September 8th. So we're actually going to try to get that out tomorrow. So the departments will start working on the budget already. And then I will work with the city manager, Naomi, and the council on trying to make sure that we have a number of study sessions dedicated for the biennial budget. She'll see some recommendations come forward to the council soon. And then lastly, one thing that we'd like to try to get in front of the council sooner rather than later, so the council can review, discuss, and hopefully make some motions, is how to use the balance of the CARES money that we have. And as you know, we had a number of recommendations from a previous presentation, and I know there's a lot of great ideas that the council and staff have as well. So look forward to presenting that to you so you have a chance to review, discuss, and hopefully make some motions. And thank you for having me back on the team. I'm very excited about our future and appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, Jeff, what kind of monies are left from CARES Act?
We've used approximately $90,000, so we have about $527,000
left. Cool. Thank you.
And so before I move on to the next part of my report, what I wanted to add was when we presented on the CARES Act, there was a general consensus. But what I think is a more prudent course, particularly if we want to withstand a federal audit for the CARES Act funding, is that we have a specific councilmanic action in motion with regard to the spending that we had proposed. So that's one of the things in an upcoming council meeting, possibly as current, recent as our next council meeting. We want to bring back that presentation and not only ensure that we're all on the same page, but to actually get a motion from council supporting us as proposed or modify as the majority deems appropriate. So you can stay tuned for that. The next matter relates to Snohomish Fire District 7 contract. I have been exchanging messages, and Chief O'Brien and I are hoping to grab coffee as a kickoff to negotiations as it relates to our contract. We'll keep you posted, and I'll probably be reaching out to Mayor Pro Tem, or excuse me, Mayor Holtzclaw and Mayor Pro Tem Vignow, as well as the Safety Committee, to ensure that what we are working on, and if there's any protocols or processes that I'm not aware of from the past, I want to make certain that when I sit down with Fire District 7 and our negotiating team, that we have all that information. So there'll be more on that. Another matter that I just want to give a quick update and a celebration on. Many of you are aware of a reporting requirement known by its acronyms, the JLARC. The JLARC stands for Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee. I've been informed by my executive team that during the pendency of this meeting, the City of Mill Creek filed a JLARC report for the very first time. Often cities are exempt when they spend less than $100,000 a year complying with public records requests. We have not yet done the math, but it looks like had we been following the rules under JLARC, the city would have been filing these reports for at least a number of years before this year. It is one more compliance issue that we have discovered, and it's one more compliance issue that we just hold ourselves bare to JLARC and say we cannot speak to the past, but the City of Mill Creek is moving in a more regulated, compliance conscious environment going forward. So that's really good news on behalf of the entire city. And with that, I'll conclude my report. We're going to move on with the...
Councilmember Todd has a question.
Okay. Yeah, so I want to offer, I'm going to volunteer Mark Bond to for his past experience on the fire district. We used to have a fire board for a long time. I think Mark served on it for a long time. And so Mark knows a lot of ins and outs. I know some of them peripherally from when we were talking about a regional fire authority, but it would be wise, Mr. City Manager, to extract some past knowledge out of folks before you get too far into this, because we have a long and interesting history with our fire district. So I'll leave it at that. Let Mark or Vince or somebody else fill in too. Thanks.
Councilmember Cavalieri.
Thanks, Mayor. So just a heads up, Mark and I do sit on the fire board. We were appointed to it last year. Mayor Pruitt was on there with us, so perhaps at some point we're going to have to either name somebody, or if Mayor Pro Tem Mayor Holtzclaw was inclined to take that role, would be okay with me.
Yeah, I wanted to say that this was a role that Mayor Pruitt had, and that I would actually be interested in joining the Joint Firebird or Firebird. I want a Firebird. The Joint Fire Board as well, in her absence, if we wanted to discuss that at a future date.
Okay. Well, Michael will be keeping us posted as we move forward. The other thing that either Michael or I should have mentioned is he and I are talking with the city attorney about putting together a study session in the coming weeks to discuss the attorney's fee. I know there's been a lot of discussion around that, and we're having to dance around what we can and cannot discuss in public session, obviously, with the pending litigation, but we are working on that so we can have a discussion of the attorney's fees and some of what's driving that. So we'll hope to have that in the coming weeks. So with that, on the staff update, I think this is Tom. I'm not sure. I don't see Tom on the screen anymore.
Yeah, I'll introduce the topic. I think Tom will be joining momentarily. At our last council meeting, the questions were asked about the status of the sub-area study. I know that Tom Rogers actually replied back to a couple members of council, but in the spirit of having a council-wide conversation, we wanted to provide you with an update regarding the sub-area study that comes right out of Tom Rogers' comprehensive email. And then we were also going to give just a very brief update on the planning department's efforts to publicize our support to the restaurants in throughout Mill Creek and their opportunities to expand their seating area where appropriate, which with their configurations available to them. So Tom, if you'd like to get us started, it'd be appreciated.
We can't hear you, Tom. You're unmuted.
That's the same problem.
Yeah, same problem. Do you want to hear me? Do you want to email him the telephone number? Caller 30 must be Tom Rogers.
Let's hope so.
Can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm hearing a lot of echo. Where's that coming from?
I need to move your computer.
Is that better now?
It was.
Try now, Tom.
Your microphone is on.
Computer, you'll get the echo.
If Councilman Steckler and Grant would mute their mics. This
yeah, mic. Just lower the sound.
Chief Eastman, you're give it another try, Tom, please.
Can you hear me now?
You can. No echo. Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, well, it's great to be here. Appreciate the introduction. It's good to see the council and to be talking about actual long-range planning after all this time. It's been since March, I think, since we've really had a chance to talk about anything like that. And so I'm excited to be here talking about the Mill Creek Boulevard subarea plan. The reason that I'm here specifically tonight is that on July 28th at the last council meeting during the report section, a couple of the council members discussed or brought the topic up of what's going on with the Mill Creek Boulevard subarea plan. And from what I listened to at that meeting, I came up with three sort of questions or discussion items. One would be, what work is being done currently? Where does the project stand as far as next steps? And what's the status of that grant that we got, the $300,000 grant? So I'm here to talk about those things and answer any kind of questions that you may have. It's important that there's no, this is just an information or an update tonight. There is no action or any kind of anything I'm asking for from the council other than to ask questions and get information. So the first question, what is being done? Well, I'd like to give a little bit of a background because sort of the recent background, this has been going on for over a year. So let me just go back a little bit. On February 4th, the vision statement was brought before the council to talk about sort of what the vision would be for the Mill Creek Boulevard sub-area, sort of a range of alternatives. And they included residential potential land uses in this area. And the council had a good discussion about it, and they asked for some additional information to give some sort of a context as to what's going on around us, what's going on with population projections, what's the Growth Management Act say, what's Vision 2050 say. And so we agreed as a staff to bring back some information, some special meetings, and have some guest speakers to talk about those sort of things, and then to revisit that vision statement again at a later date. And the vision statement's really important because that's what the Planning Advisory Committee is going to use to put together some land use alternatives to study. We're looking at doing three of them. And the three would be one that nothing changes as far as land uses. So it's more of a public works improvements kind of a plan, make it more of a gateway. And then the other two could potentially have different kinds of land uses. And that would be the residential mixed use component. And so it's important that we get good direction from the council to start with so we don't go down the road too far and then end up with something that isn't acceptable to anybody. So that's the importance of it. So we had, again, we planned to have three different meetings. The first one that we had was the Growth Management Act and Population Growth meeting. And we had Steve Toy from Snohomish County. He's their demographer. And he came and gave a discussion about what to expect and out of Vision 2050, the kind of numbers that are coming to the county likely, and what the process is for us to be divvying those numbers up between the different cities and the county. And I think that we had a really good discussion about that. The second meeting we had was the East-West Corridor Study. This gets at the transportation issues of getting from one side of I-5 to the other. Excuse me. And also the light rail station planning, sort of those two stations, one at 128th in I-5 and the other at 164th in I-5 approximately. ST3 is going to come through there. So what is the county planning for as far as their urban center kind of thing? So we got Jay Larson to come out and talk to the council. And I think we had a really good discussion about there and kind of what's going on directly around the city. We had a third meeting planned that would be talking about the background of the economic conditions, sort of what they were in the past when we conceived of and built the town center, and then sort of what they are now and what's driving the economy and what kind of land uses or redevelopment is possible. What would it take to have redevelopment? And that meeting got canceled right when the COVID hit. And so that has not happened yet. And that's going to be what's going to be coming up in this near future. The plan was to do these three presentations and then ask the question back to the council again on a vision statement. Do you want the consultant and the city to consider residential or mixed use kind of land uses in this sub area? And that's a really important thing that we have to know before we go any further. And so we're going to be meeting on that soon. I'll talk about it in a second. As far as the work that's been going on since the COVID shutdown of City Hall, we haven't done any really. It's been very, very minimal. Since earlier, about mid last month in August, we did start talking about getting it kicked back up again. I've been talking to the consultant and Brian, who's on the consultant team, to talk about I can't remember his last name, I'm sorry, but talking about getting that presentation ready, which is going to be on September the 22nd. That's where it's on the agenda coming up. But we haven't done really anything. You haven't seen any significant invoices come through other than to pay some bills of work that had happened prior to the shutdown in March. So on September 22nd, we will be meeting with the council and trying to get some input from the council after the presentation. And again, we're going to be asking whether or not residential options should be part of the things that are analyzed and compared against each other, or if we're going to stick to the existing land use plan. It's really important that we're not going to try to push it. I mean, we'd like a decision on the 22nd, obviously. But, you know, it's your plan. It's the city's plan. If it takes more time, it takes more time. That's the message. You know, you're ready to go when you're ready to go, but it's important that you feel comfortable where we're going before we start hopping the car and start driving down the road. One other thing that we're going to do on the 22nd is bring a contract addendum to the city council. If you recall, the plan was supposed to be done last spring, and it's not done, partially because of the COVID, partially because we had a lot of extra meetings, sort of education, PAC meetings and council meetings. So as April 31st, which was the original date, approached, the city manager under the procurement manual, the policies, extended it for 6 months. We didn't know how long the COVID thing would continue to go on. But it can only go for 6 months up to October 31st. Any extension beyond that requires the city council to actually take the action on that. And so that'll be coming before you on the 22nd. And right now I'm working with the consultant to come up with a revised schedule to sort of plan it out. And we're prepared to go with the go-to meeting format if we have to. But let's plan out the PAC meetings and kind of reprogram it out now that we're kind of ready to start working on these things again. And so you'll see that on the agenda on the 22nd as well. The third question is sort of whatever happened to that grant, is it still good? And I'm happy to say that the grant is still effective. It's still in place. It's approximately $300,000, and it effectively pays 99% of the cost of this grant or of this project. And very grateful to Senator Steve Hobbs because he basically helped shepherd that through the legislature. Now it's a reimbursement grant, so we haven't been reimbursed at all yet. There are two milestones that we have to meet, and the first one, we're not there yet, and so that is when we have the vision statement, we prepare some plans, go through a public process, and determine what the preferred alternative is. And once we have that, that's milestone one, and then we can submit to be reimbursed for everything up to that point. The second milestone is when they take that preferred alternative, we do the drawings, 30% drawings for what the roads kind of are going to be, the public improvements, and some sort of the zoning text, the things that would actually be considered as part of a comprehensive plan amendment in the future or zoning amendments in the future. There's no requirement that we adopt those plans and put them in the comprehensive plan to get reimbursed. The grant just has us come to a point where the package is all together and it can be considered future through our regular legislative process. But we do have to get to that point to get to the second milestone and be reimbursed for the entirety of the project. So that's what I had prepared talking about tonight or as the update. I've talked to you, a couple of you individually when you called and asked questions, but let me know do you have any other questions?
Anyone have any questions for Tom? Councilmember Steckler.
Tom, is there an expiration on that grant? Do we have to do something by a certain date?
I don't recall there being an actual termination date. We actually had some recent discussions with the Department of Commerce on some of the contract formalities of getting the right signatures and everything, and it's all ship shape right now, and there was no mention of that. But I'll go back and check that to make sure. I don't recall there being an actual time frame or a drop dead date on it.
Any other questions for Tom? With that, okay. Were there any other reports, Michael, you had from staff?
Yes, Mayor, just very briefly again from Tom. you could just get an update on the efforts to reach out to the restaurants to let them know what we are doing here at City Hall with the support of our council to give them all opportunities for flexibility with regard to the space available to them by their restaurants. Tom, what's your status update?
Okay, my status update on that is that we were listening when the council talked about the importance of assisting our cities, both with looking for additional space for outdoor seating as well as assistance with the state alcohol and cannabis board. So one of the things we did as staff was to go around and do a survey of every restaurant in town physically, sort of a windshield survey, or get out of your car if you needed to, depending on where it was. And we prepared a matrix of what all these establishments are, whether or not they have area for an outside service, whether they're providing that or not, whether they have alcohol or not. So we took that and prepared sort of a priority list. All of those businesses that have area for seating and are not providing seating yet, whether or not they have alcohol, staff did contact them directly and let them know that that is a something that the city supports and would assist them with. We were able to assist one business, which is Sushi Spot. You may have driven by and seen their sort of their new outside seating area. And we assisted them getting their application into the state cannabis and liquor board. The others, I think most of the restaurants in the city that have suitable area for seating have already been taking advantage of that even before the COVID happened. So it was a pretty limited list. And those that have some area but aren't that interested are mostly takeout kind of restaurants, such as a Toshi's or something like that, that they're just not, that's just not their business model. And so they for example, also the Korean barbecue. They're just, that's not something that they're interested in doing. Maybe just they don't like to have the outdoor seating. But we did make the attempt. We have contacted all the restaurants, and I think they were pretty grateful and gracious that we cared enough to come and knock on their door. So that's the end of my report.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. It was the shoe leather that had us actually reaching out to them rather than just simply an announcement on our social media that I think was appreciated. And Tom, I want to thank you and your team for getting that done. That concludes our report, Mayor.
Thank you, City Manager. And with that, we are back to audience communication, item N on the agenda. So as I said at the outset, those who are interested in speaking, raise your hand or shout out. I'll try to get to everyone in order. I see Barbara, you'll go first when we get there. So when you're called on, please state your name and address for the record. And then Naomi will keep the clock. Please try to keep your comments to 3 minutes, and that clock will not begin until after you've said your name and address for the record. So with that, Barbara, you can go ahead and start off.
Hey, Barb Heidel, 1401 144th Place, Southeast, Mill Creek. First, I'm glad to hear that you're going over the governance manual. So far, I've only read a few sections. I think it's a wise move to update it. So I'm very pleased to hear that you're going to do that. Secondly, I am so thrilled that Jeff.
Yeah, buddy.
Pardon? So far, I am thrilled to hear that Jeff Ballantyne is back on the board, on our city staff. I think he's an excellent person, well knowledgeable, and especially in light of starting to go through this budget system season, I am thrilled that he's back on board. Thank you.
Hey, who would like to speak? I don't see a lot of cameras on, so people are going to have to speak up.
I would.
Who is that? Please identify yourself, name and address.
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, B101, Mill Creek. Tremendous congratulations to Mayor Holtzclaw and Mayor Pro Tem Vignal. I'm really happy about that. I appreciate the mayor coming in immediately with some fresh ideas. You're not going to be surprised that I'm really excited about the review an update of the governance manual, which I personally have read at least three times since 2017, just saying. Thanks to Chief Eastman for the great presentation. I think this is a really important conversation for the times, and I'm glad that Mill Creek is having it. I am tremendously relieved to have Jeff Valentin back. That's fantastic. And I am always real glad to hear from Tom Rogers. So good meeting. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Carmen. Who else? Please identify yourself next up. Any takers? Going once, twice, three times. That will end the audience communication for tonight. We are now going to move into executive session to discuss the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1G. No action will be taken at the conclusion of the executive session. Grant and Michael, how long we're noticed for the meeting till 8:30, correct?
That is correct.
It's 8 o'clock. Do you think you need more than a half hour for now?
Mayor, I don't know that we'll need more than 10 minutes. If we want to go to 15 just to play it safe.
Okay, so let's stick with we won't adjust the regular meeting for now, and we'll go into executive session until 8:15.
Okay.
So we're going to leave and go into a different room. And then if we need to extend, I will come back and announce if we're extending the executive session and then pop back into the executive session.
Thank you.
Are we going to be receiving a separate link?
Yes. So please take a look at your email. It was already sent. I'll resend it just so that you have it on top of your queue.
Okay. Thank you.
I sent my email. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, people there? Council is going to be extending the executive session until 8:30. It's 8:15 now, so we are going to go till 8:30. The council is extending the regular meeting till 9 o'clock and is extending the executive session until 8:45. I'll be back at 8:45 if we need to extend the executive session further. Thanks.
Thank you.
Without exception, the council is extending the executive session for 5 more minutes till 8:50.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Sorry I got lost in cyberspace. The council concluded its executive session without objection at 8:49. And without objection at 8:50, we are adjourning the regular meeting.
Very good. Thank you.
Did you get all the notes of the extensions, Naomi?
Yeah, it's all recorded anyway.
Okay,
so
I've got the notes. If you need it tomorrow, you can call me and I've got it written down.
That would be perfect. Thank you so much. Good night, everyone.